gives them a chance to jump up and down and declare victory. Of course, anyone who's seen the movie knows better and won't be a sucker for this kind of thing. But it tends to work on people who have very limited exposure to my work and just go, wow, this Dinesh must be kind of extreme. I mean, gee, Hitler's a liberal Democrat. Did he really say that? So this is what we're dealing with in our culture today, the breakdown of just any genuine intellectual debate. Even in mainstream outlets that you would expect more from, you're just getting this kind of track.
It's a movement, but it's about people. Be the People is about we the people joining forces to reclaim and reshape the best of our nation's time-treasured traditions. Each week, we offer insightful interviews with movers and shakers from all different spheres of life. And now, please welcome Dr. Carol Swain.
We the people know elections have consequences. The future of President Trump's legislative agenda, his ability to appoint judges, and his impact on national and international issues depend on the outcome of the midterm elections taking place less than 60 days from now. Democrats need 23 House seats to control the House and 2 Senate seats to capture the Senate. 35 Senate seats are on the line, and all 435 House seats. Right now, the likelihood of continued control of the Senate looks better than the House. Joining me today to discuss the midterm elections and other issues is my friend and fellow warrior, Dinesh D'Souza. We'll discuss the midterm elections, actions we as conservatives can do that go beyond merely voting, censorship of conservatives, and his latest book and film, Death of a Nation. Hello, Dinesh.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
I'm doing great. Well, welcome to the Be the People podcast that's now featured on the Malcolm Out Loud Network.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to have this conversation with you.
And my first question to you is, what can conservatives do to counter the crazy antics of the liberal left that seem to know no boundaries?
I think the first thing to do is to expose the extremism of the left, the gangsterization of the Democratic Party that has happened, I believe, under Hillary and Obama, to show that there's been a breakdown of civility, a breakdown of respect for the process, a willingness to use the weapons of the state against political opponents, an attempt to even fix the result of a democratic election. Now, this is unprecedented kind of behavior, and it's coming exclusively from one side. This is not a case where there's plenty of blame to go around or both sides are equally culpable. No, both sides are not equally culpable. This kind of incivility and even savagery is coming from the left, and it's our job to oppose it, counter it, and turn it into a millstone of the people who are around the necks of the people who are doing it.
Now, I know that you are out there every day trying to expose the left through your opinion pieces, as well as speaking on college campuses and giving interviews to the media that will have you on. Do you feel like you are making progress? And also, who are the other people out there that are conservative that you think are able to impact the general public and not just other conservatives?
I think it is important to try to, well, I mean, motivating people is important. So there's nothing wrong with reaching your own side. In fact, midterm elections are driven by enthusiasm and turnout. And the side that can generate more enthusiasm has an advantage in the midterm election. One of the reasons that it's conventionally believed that the opposing party gains seats is because they do have this kind of advantage in momentum and enthusiasm. So one of the reasons I write books and make movies is to fire up the conservatives and show them that they have to be vigilant, not just in election season, but pretty much throughout the year. Now, I'm very troubled, of course, by the way in which social media has been restricting conservative views. I hope that that can be changed, because a lot of conservatives fled to social media away from mainstream media because they found some of those avenues to be closed. It's particularly disheartening then to find that places like Facebook and Google and Twitter are using their power to rig the game, if you will, against one side.
Well, you know, back in 2011, when I published my book, Be the People, I talked about, at that time, the National Security Agency was pursuing that relationship with Google, how dangerous that was back in 2010. And so we saw first it was Google, and then it was Facebook and Twitter, and I don't know about Instagram, but it was clearly part of the Democratic left's agenda to control America.
I find it disturbing how rules that are put into place for one purpose metastasize and become abused in a much more general way. We saw, for example, how some of the kind of RICO statutes that were put into place to go after the mafia routinely against American citizens who have nothing to do with the mafia. NSA spying, which was and surveillance, which was instituted to catch terrorists. We find that Americans who are not even suspected of terrorism are now having their phone calls recorded, their contact lists downloaded, their emails tracked, and so on. So clearly, these strategies, which are justified or claim to be justified under narrow circumstances, are then expanded for abusive use, and in this case, for political use.
Well, I mean, going back to 9/11, and, you know, George W. Bush was the president that put in, you know, many of the what we saw at the time as needed protections. But the Patriot Act has proven to be a serious mistake because that act almost immediately was used against American citizens and not just those who were suspected of terrorism.
Yes, I think conservatives, and I would count myself and fault myself as being in this, tended to be somewhat uncritical defenders of the national security state. And you realize over time how these things can be flipped on you. And it's particularly interesting now to see many of the leftists who historically have railed against the CIA, railed against the FBI, railed against the police state, have now become the champions of the police state. Why? Because they feel that the police state is working on their behalf.
Well, I mean, it seems to be working on their behalf. Going back to the platforms that a lot of us use, like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, what do you think conservatives should do? Conservatives like me, like my followers, my base, that's pretty much Facebook. How can we make ourselves less dependent on those outlets?
Well, these outlets were set up and, in a sense, promised to be nothing more than platforms. You may say content-neutral platforms that allowed you to exchange information, speak out, exercise your First Amendment rights. Now it becomes clear that these are rigged platforms, and they do aim quite openly to control content. Now, there's some conservatives who go, well, that's just fine because they're private institutions and they have every right to do this if they want. But I don't think that's true, because imagine if Google had said, for example, that we're going to make sure that no Latinos can, our searches discriminate against Latinos, or if Twitter said that we're going to systematically exclude blacks. I mean, there would be such a deafening outroar. In fact, Twitter, I believe, would be shut down in no time if they even attempted such a thing. So the fact that these are private institutions does not give them an unlimited ability to use their discriminatory power, particularly in this politically prejudicial way. And I'm glad that Trump is on it. I'm glad that he's getting involved. The main problem for Trump is that he doesn't control his own Justice Department. Now, partly this is his own fault, because had he fired Comey and had he fired Rosenstein on day one, and I don't know what's happened with Jeff Sessions, but the left has been able to pry away the Justice Department from Trump. It's the one federal agency that he has seemingly no control over. And if he tries to control it, they'll say he's obstructing justice. So this has become a supreme problem in the Trump first term.
Well, I mean, I agree with you about Facebook and Google. It seems to me that back in 2010, when Google formed an alliance with the National Security Agency and then Facebook worked for the government, once they start working for the government, I don't see how they can claim to be a private institution with no accountability at the same time they have been taking money from the federal government.
I think it's also the case that these tech moguls tend to be politically on the left. Now, at the first glance, this is a paradox because it's technological capitalism that has made success possible. But nevertheless, they somehow take the system for granted. They feel no responsibility to defend the free market system that enables them to be what they are. Socially, I think many of these guys are on the left, and they've, in many cases, Google being a prominent example, they've actually made a kind of almost open alliance with the Democratic left, and they're fighting on one side of the political spectrum. So you see here the great weakness of conservatism in being able to, in ceding all this really important territory, cultural territory, involving media. And I'm referring here not just to the social media, but to the mainstream media, to the music industry, to Broadway, to Hollywood, and to large portions of academia. It's very difficult to fight politically when all this cultural ground is dominated by the left.
I agree. We need to take a brief break. And when we return, I'd like to talk about some of the reactions to Death of a Nation.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm back with Dinesh, our conservative warrior and friend. And I was just asking him about his movie and book, Death of a Nation. Just some of the reactions he's encountered from the liberal left, as well as from fellow conservatives.
The reaction on the left has forked into two categories. There are large groups of people, particularly in television, that have just completely ignored the movie. And, you know, it seems odd because here's a movie. It's been in 1,000 theaters. It's all over the country. Its topics of racism and white supremacy, fascism could not be more timely. And yet, as far as CBS, NBC, ABC, CNN, they all pretend the movie just does not exist. And their hope, I guess, is that if they don't cover it, it's not a fact in the world. This, I think, is really shameful because it really means that we don't even debate things. We just try to make them go away by not giving them any exposure. Now, in the print media, the movie has been covered and attacked. I mean, there were two long pieces on me and the film in the Atlantic Monthly, a big piece in the New York Times, one in the Washington Post. But in general, if you look at Times and the Post, the emphasis is essentially on just fundamentally distorting my central claims. So they'll say things like, well, Dinesh claims that Hitler was a liberal Democrat. No, I don't claim Hitler was a liberal Democrat. No one who sees the movie would get that impression. So by creating a straw man and then knocking it down, it gives people who have no desire or ability to actually engage with the film, it gives them a chance to jump up and down and declare victory. Of course, anyone who's seen the movie knows better and won't be a sucker for this kind of thing. But it tends to work on people who have very limited exposure to my work and just go, wow, this Dinesh must be kind of extreme. I mean, gee, Hitler's a liberal Democrat. Did he really say that? So this is what we're dealing with in our culture today, the breakdown of just any genuine intellectual debate, even in mainstream outlets that you would expect more from. You're just getting this kind of trap.
Well, what advice do you have for, you know, the American people, the people who will listen to this podcast? You know, what can we do to help get out the word about your film, your book, but also other conservative messages that liberal communities that are captive, and I'm thinking about the black community, they need to see the film. They need to hear the ideas of conservatives. How can we, the people, combat what's out there?
Well, I'm trying in my own way to get this message out to young people and to minorities. And I think there's a better opportunity to do this when the movie comes out in DVD, because there are lots of people who need to hear the message who are not likely to go to the theater to see a documentary film, which tends to be a little bit of a specialized product anyway. But lots of people like to watch documentaries at home. And so I'm looking for ways to get this message out through black pastors and black churches, to distribute it to young people. Perhaps to get the message out through this Waakameh movement that Brandon Strock is heading, different ways of reaching people that wouldn't be in my normal orbit of information. Because I think once people see the truth, and not just read it, but they see it on the screen, they feel it emotionally, then they're likely to experience that kind of epiphany, that eye-opening moment where you go, wow, I really have to, I might have been suckered here. I need to really rethink many of my basic assumptions that I have previously just sort of digested uncritically.
Well, one of the things I think is that the film, and I've seen it several times, that for many people, that can be a great starting point for their own research. And so for college students, you know, it should stimulate ideas for them to write research papers and, you know, for some people to write their own books. And so I see great value there with your work.
Well, that's exactly what I'm striving for. And when I speak on campus, I'll tell young people, look, I don't expect you to believe everything I'm saying, but the beauty of living today is you can check it out. If I say that the racist Dixiecrats did not move over to the Republican Party, that the vast majority of them stayed and lived and died as Democrats, hey, you pull out your phone, you call up all the racist Dixiecrats, you count on your hands how many of them moved over to the Republican Party. There's a way for you to verify whether what I'm saying is true. And that's what happens with the movie. If you had no exposure to my work, you'd see all these bombshell revelations and you'd, for a moment, you'd be discombobulated. You'd go, well, wow, if what this guy is saying is true, how come I haven't seen it on the History Channel? How come I don't see it in Wikipedia? How come none of my professors study this? And the answer is that, look, the progressives have dominated academia and the media for well over a generation now. And I'm not saying that they're putting out outright lies, but I am saying that they're spinning the narrative in a way that protects progressive interests, that covers up, if you will, the crimes of progressive Democrats, that tends to try to shift the ideological blame onto the other side. It's not entirely surprising that they would try to do this. And yet, when the narrative is questioned, I think it's difficult for people to see that that's actually what they've been ingesting and then mindlessly regurgitating.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I'm not a filmmaker, but when I was actively teaching, I used films a lot, you know, to take students back to certain eras. And I believe that more people might use your film, even if they were going to use it in a classroom, to try to ridicule the film if it was a little bit shorter. And I don't know if there's a reason why so many documentary films are long, but, you know, if they were just a little bit shorter and maybe did not have so many ideas, because I do think when people are just hit with so many ideas, they walk away. Some people walk away with the big idea, and then some people will walk away so confused that they may not focus on the things that are really important.
I mean, I agree with you, Carol. I think that there's room for making full-length films. I think also in the long term, on our side, we have to move into feature films, because many of the most powerful narratives from the left come in romantic comedies and thrillers and even animated family movies, and not just in documentaries. The documentary is one genre, but making shorter films, there's plenty of room for that. Films that make a single point, shorter videos. As you know, you and I have both done work for Prager University, short videos that make a point, hit it, and then get out. So I think there's room for all these different formats. I do try to put a lot of information into my films, in part because I do them only once every couple of years. And so I'm trying embed them with the kind of detail that shows you that this is just not a sketchy outline of an argument. It actually gets in there in a pretty dense way. And there's a lot of information there so that you can actually watch the film two or three times and still get something out of it every single time.
Well, one of my suggestions, and I'm like a repository of unsolicited advice, so here's some unsolicited advice. The homeschool market, you know, they are looking for materials. And if you could have someone else just edit the films to make them shorter, maybe an hour long, I think that you would be able to reach another market. But also, if they were edited, at the very end, they would have all the sources listed, or they would come with a study guide, that you have this whole market out there, millions of people that are homeschooling that could use that information, but it needs to be repackaged a little bit.
That's a really good idea, Carol. We did something somewhat similar for one of my earlier movies, America, where we made an educational version of it, actually cutting out about a half hour from the film so that the educational version of the America movie, we also cut out some of the partisan politics in the movie so that the film becomes now an argument about American exceptionalism, what makes America unique, critiques of America, kind of a case for rational patriotism. And that was considerably shorter than the original movie. And the point of it was to distribute it among young people and in schools. Of course, we found out that that's actually quite hard to do, particularly in the public school system where you need layers and layers of bureaucratic approval to have a film shown in school. Now, again, films on the left tend to survive that process. Al Gore's movie on global warming, or even some of Michael Moore's work, which is intellectually, you know, silly compared to the kind of stuff I produce. But nevertheless, there is a bias in its favor. It's difficult to get the material in schools. But the homeschools, as you say, might be a much more fertile ground for them.
Well, I'm sure that the homeschools would be. But when you think about universities as well as some of the private high schools, professors and teachers make those choices. And so identifying the conservatives and marketing your school materials to that group, I think that they would find their way into some of the classrooms. And when I short conservative films, I always balance them with Michael Moore or something that was liberal so that I would not be accused of, you know, pushing a particular agenda. And so I think there are professors that would try to show more than one side.
That would certainly be healthy. I mean, I mentioned about the media earlier, and you know, that kind of thing used to occur. I mean, even on CNN, you might remember, Carol, years ago, they had this show Crossfire. They would have Pat Buchanan on the right and Michael Kinsley on the left. And so there would be an argument going on between the right and the left. But that's the old CNN. That's not CNN today. If it was CNN today, and then I did the movie Death of a Nation, I would be on with an historian, and we'd be debating whether or not fascism is on the left or on the right. Did racism, in fact, migrate from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party or not? But in fact, CNN is not interested in that kind of a debate. In fact, they don't dare take risk of putting somebody like me on with a Chris Matthews or a Rachel Maddow or a Wolf Blitzer or Anderson Cooper just because they're afraid that their own people would start looking like fools.
Well, I mean, part of it, too, is that their audience, it's composed of snowflakes. And the times that I've been on and I've debated a liberal, people just go berserk because they see the media as their safe space. They do not want to be exposed to conservative ideas on liberal media. And the media, I believe, they've caved to that.
Yeah, the media, I mean, ironically, you know, in other countries, my wife is from Venezuela. So in socialist Venezuela, the government was able to bring the media into submission, but they had to sort of intimidate them and beat them and terrorize them into surrendering to the ideological demands of the state. What I find amazing in America is that the media is complicit. They're willing. You don't have to even pay them to do it. They're happy to be defenders of the police state. They're happy to cover up its crimes. They're happy to try to go after its enemies. And so we have a serious problem with media in this country. It's one of the reasons why, you know, even though Trump can be out there on Twitter, I like the fact that he's out there on Twitter because he's liberated from this kind of distorted filter of the mainstream media.
Well, I can tell you that part of that, and I much of what's happening today goes back to Saul Alinsky. That deception, the infiltration, the manipulation. There are so many journalists that went into journalism because they were social justice warriors to advance an agenda. And I think that conservatives are less likely to do that, but that's how the political left has captured a lot of our institutions.
This may actually be the mortal weakness of the conservative side. You see it, I see it particularly with entrepreneurs. They're so dependent on the system of free market capitalism to make their success possible, and yet they do so little, almost nothing, to actually defend the infrastructure, the political infrastructure that enables them to do what they do. They focus on their own business, yes, let's say the oil business. But on the other hand, when the left starts targeting fracking and wants to outlaw this and wants to outlaw that, they spend very little time actually saying, okay, listen, I can't do my business if tax rates weren't amenable and if I didn't have low levels of regulation that allow me to function properly. So I should invest some of my resources in defending the system that enables me to do what I do. But a lot of people don't do that.
You're certainly right about that. We're going to take another break, and after the break, I'd like for you to just talk about, you know, a little bit about your next project and just some things that we can do to help you and to help other conservatives.
Are you wondering what we can do about immigration? Then get your copy of my newly released book, Debating Immigration, the second edition, available at Amazon, Cambridge University Press, and all major booksellers.
Back with Dinesh D'Souza, and we're talking about a variety of things that are important for people who care about America. And so one of the things I would like Dinesh to do is to talk about his next project, how we can help him and how we can get in touch with him.
Well, my website is DineshDeSouza.com. The movie will, as I say, be out in DVD before the election. And I have a book called Death of a Nation of the same title. I like to do the book and movie as kind of a 1-2 punch. The movie is an emotional narrative, inspiring. The book lays out the chapter and verse. There's a lot of information you can't get into a movie, and I put it all in the book. I'm thinking ahead to the presidential election year, 2 years ahead. I also am trying to figure out ways for conservatism to establish an outpost in Hollywood, in media, and in academia, and to do this in unconventional ways. I might find ways to break into feature films for the reasons I mentioned earlier, that feature films are a very powerful way to convey ideas through stories. And also in academia, I think it's not enough for us, Carol, for you and me to go speak on campus. I think at the end of the day, there also have to be alternative ways of delivering educational content, perhaps using the new media and using technology, online education, ways to deliver high-quality education for a low price, and ways that can help to break what is really the leftist monopoly, particularly in elite education.
Well, Dinesh, thank you so much for spending time with us. And I wish you well with all of your projects. And if there's anything that I can do to help, you know where to find me.
Absolutely. Thank you, Carol. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it's been great having Dinesh D'Souza on today. And you can see that we conservatives have our work cut out for us. There are so many areas where we need to band together to think of new strategies to combat the liberal left. And we also need to make sure that we are familiar with their tactics. And so one of the books that I always recommend for conservatives to read is Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, so that we understand the tactics that they use against conservatives. And until next time, remember that we the people can be the people who change America.